From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. China's ban on 24 types of trash imports is changing the recycling business and waste management in the United States. The new policy on what China will accept limits the type of plastic and unsorted paper recycling collectors are taking, while a new threshold for acceptable contamination sits at 0.5%. That's a significant change from a previously acceptable impurity level of 5%. Some officials say this new standard is next to impossible to achieve. On an earlier edition of Coastline in June, we explored how local environmental management officials are working to divert waste from the landfill. We'll get an update on New Hanover County's composting initiative, which launched its public phase July 1st, but we'll also take a deeper dive into the recycling market and how national and international changes are affecting the Cape Fear region. Today, we'll get answers to the questions you still have about what's recyclable, what's not, and why your good intentions might be sending a whole load of recyclable material to the landfill instead. Joining us today, Brian Shea. He's the Sunoco Recycling Plant Manager for both New Hanover and Onslow counties. Brian Shea, welcome to Coastline.
Happy to be here.
Joe Suleiman is the director of New Hanover County's Environmental Management Department. Welcome, Joe Suleiman.
Thanks for having me, Rachel.
And we are inviting you to join the conversation. What confuses you about recycling in the Cape Fear region? Do you always wonder about a certain kind of waste when it's time to throw it away, if it's recyclable, or whether there are other options for it? Or do you have a good idea for reducing your own waste stream? Share it with us or ask your question on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. Because of the relatively new policies in China regarding not only the materials they'll accept, but also the contamination level issue, let's talk about what's changed in terms of materials. Brian Shea, what did Sunoco accept for recycling a year ago that is not acceptable today?
I think one of the biggest changes that we've seen is what we consider a mixed rigid plastic. For example, maybe a 5-gallon bucket that might have some residue in it used to be acceptable as there was a market for it. A lot has changed in that time, as you'd mentioned, with China's ban on certain materials, and that's definitely one of them, probably the highest on the list that has changed.
Now, we've seen those little triangles with arrows on the bottom of plastic items that have numbers 1 through 7. Did Sunoco accept 1 through 7 a year ago?
Not exactly. And as you get into the numbers, it gets a little complicated of all the different types of plastics there are. We've always focused on 1s and 2s, which is your PET bottles, your soda bottles, and then your milk jugs, which are HDPE and laundry detergent bottles. So we've always focused on those as there's typically an outlet, a domestic outlet for that. As you get into some of the other plastics, it gets a little more complicated how they're effectively recycled and recovered down the supply chain.
Joe Suleiman, with the crunch now on global recycling markets, does that mean that more material is going to the New Hanover County landfill?
We used to see contamination rates of about 10 to 11%, and now we're seeing them north of 15%. And just for perspective, the Sunoco MRF here in New Hanover County does about 25,000 tons a year, so it's a pretty significant jump in the amount of residue we're taking at the landfill from that facility.
So you're saying that recyclable material is more contaminated than it's ever been?
Absolutely.
And so that means more recyclable material is actually going to the landfill.
That's right.
I want to make sure that we don't forget about, we're talking so much today about material that's no longer acceptable and how recycling collectors are going to start dealing with that and environmental managers. But there is something that you're now accepting, Brian Shea, that you weren't accepting a year ago for recycling. What is that?
That's correct. We call them aseptic containers, or more simply put, cartons. People have milk cartons or orange juice cartons. Those are acceptable, and that was due to an upgrade we made at our Jacksonville facility that allowed us to more efficiently process materials which opened up capacity for us to handle different types of materials.
So those kind of milk cartons you said with that wax coating on it, those did not used to be recyclable, but they are now.
That's correct. They're a very niche commodity and market, so we don't want to get them confused with wax cardboard or wax, you know. It's a very niche market, so there's processors that can handle aseptic containers specifically that have that coating on it and are able to recycle it. But, you know, we don't want to confuse that with all wax coating or all wax cardboard is acceptable, because that's not correct.
So then how do we know whether something is an aseptic container?
So, again, it's most simply put, in an everyday store, when you buy it, some of them will even have it on the container that, like, this material is recyclable. But if you buy, like, a milk jug, some of the organic milk jugs are out there, that's considered an aseptic container. It has a little plastic lid on the top, orange juice container, et cetera. That's the most easy way to recognize it without deep diving into the tearing the fibers.
Okay. So. There are a lot of soup manufacturers that now put their soups in those kinds of rectangular, cardboardy, waxy things. Are those considered aseptic containers?
They are, and we encourage people on that note to make sure we clean those out. So if you do have soup or leftover milk and residue, the inside of it has to be clean. Otherwise, it is considered trash. Again, it's a very niche market. And so when we process those and it's processed down the road, it's just not feasible to have much leftover soup in there.
Don writes, supposedly almost everything New Hanover County residents can learn about the recycling program in the county is contained on the website. And he posts a link, recycling.nhcgov.com. Is this website, he asks, current with today's discussion? Joe Suleiman.
I believe so. We go through on a routine basis, especially if we get a note from a resident saying, you know, hey, I've been on your site recently and I don't think this is right. And we'll immediately go in there and check that. But a perfect example is most recently our vendor that we were shipping reclaimed carpet to stopped accepting that. And so we had to drop that from our list of acceptable materials for recycling. So we've been on the website as recently as a week ago to update that. So I would encourage your listeners, if there is something out there that either you think we are not addressing or you think is incorrect, please let me know.
How much of the recycling market is reused carpet? Is that a real niche piece of it, or is that actually significant?
It wasn't a large quantity that we received at the landfill for recycling. To give you an idea, we would ship out a tractor trailer load about every 3 months, and it typically weighed about 15 tons.
We had a call. Lisa of Wilmington asks, does New Hanover County recycle number 5? Also, Food Lion says they recycle cellophane wrappers, cereal boxes, Ziploc bags. Are these recyclable? And is Food Lion recycling these appropriately? Brian Shea, number 5.
Yeah, I think we have to determine the viability of recycling and where to recycle. There's a key difference in what's recyclable and where to recycle it and how to recycle it. For example, in the curbside bin, you know, number 5s are not recyclable. But if Food Lion is not necessarily misleading, I mean, they definitely are recycling those in a different way. But if you think about how they recycle them, it's much different than coming across a curbside bin. So even very similar to that example of reclaimed carpet, that's collected in a much different way than putting it in the curbside bin. So people need to understand the distinguished facets. Recycling in a whole is very general, but curbside recycling or residential recycling, people need to understand those differences and where they can properly recycle.
What is number 5 that Lisa is asking about? Give us some examples, Joe Suleiman.
An example would be like a yogurt cup. When you go to the dairy part of the grocery store and you see all the Greek yogurts and flavored yogurts and things like that, typically that's the most common type of number 5 that you'll come across in the grocery store.
And so those, to be clear, are not recyclable?
Not in this market, no.
those, if they are put into somebody's recycling bin, those will get sorted out and sent to the landfill.
That's correct.
I think that's an alarming thought for a lot of people. I think that kind of plastic is probably something that many people assume it's just recyclable. Are recycling collectors like Sonoco seeking new markets then for this material, Brian Shea?
Absolutely. You know, especially an issue with us being strategically located in this area to the port where a lot of stuff was exported, has definitely proved the challenge to find those outlets. But our company, Sonoco Products, as a whole, is a vertically integrated company. So half of what comes across the curbside bin is consumed by our own company. And so that's a very important distinction, especially, you know, as we are processing this material, to have that ability to process our own material. And so as a vertically integrated company, we're willing, we're making those necessary upgrades and changes to consume a lot of that product. But of course, there's always going to be other outlets or mills that need materials, et cetera.
And can you tell us about what's in the pipeline? You talked about the fact that you'll now accept aseptic containers because of a technological upgrade at your Fayetteville facility.
Is it our Jacksonville facility?
Jacksonville, sorry. And actually, I'm going to get you on the other side of this break on that question. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. We're getting answers to your head-scratching recycling questions after China's move to limit the material it accepts, which is changing the game for everybody. Joe Suleiman, New Hanover County's Environmental Management Director, and Brian Shea, plant manager of Sonoco's Onslow and New Hanover County plants, are answering your questions on this Wednesday. We also want to hear your ideas for cutting down on the waste stream. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or send an email to coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're exploring the ways China's decisions to restrict recycling imports is affecting waste management and recycling in the Cape Fear region. Brian Shea is plant manager for Sonoco's New Hanover and Onslow County plant. Joe Suleiman is director of New Hanover County's Environmental Management Department. And since consumer education is one of the key components of waste management, they're eager to answer your recycling questions on this Wednesday. You can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. So to go back to this idea of the acceptance of aseptic containers, those cardboard soup containers, am I using the right terminology?
Yes. Yeah.
And some orange juice containers, milk containers. Where, again, are those accepted?
They're processed at the Jacksonville plant, but all of those containers end up at the Jacksonville plant from any curbside or commercial collection route from as far north as New Bern all the way down to the South Carolina state line and as far west as Columbus County line.
Okay, so across the board, people can really focus on recycling those aseptic containers. Now, before we went to break, Brian Shea of Sonoco, I was asking you about other new technologies that might be coming online for Sonoco that will help to deal with this change in needing to deal with recycled material.
Absolutely, yeah. There are always emerging technologies in the recycling industry as a whole. I mean, relatively speaking, curbside recycling is relatively new as an industry, you know, within 10, 15, 20 years. So there's always emerging technologies when it comes out. And Sonoco is committed to processing efficiently as possible. And that includes both on the integrated business as far as how they accept some of the recyclable materials and the machines it takes to process that and remove contamination. Additionally, to the MRF side, which is what I handle, of the technologies that are coming out, which the optical scanning technology that is identifying different types of material with infrared cameras and sensors and ejecting it from the stream with air. So pretty impressive technologies that are coming out, and there are emerging technologies as robotics comes online that could very well be in the future.
And what kinds of material do you hope Sonoco will be able to accept due to emerging technology?
I think we're very open to accepting as much material as possible and diverting it from the waste stream if it's a viable market to make sense. It has to make economic sense for us to be willing to accept material. Otherwise, there's just no market for it, and it's very difficult to make that happen. So I don't have a crystal ball, and nor what we will accept, but I know as new technologies come out and make it more efficient, there definitely could be opportunities in the future.
We have an email from Paul who writes, when will the entire waste stream be sorted? Currently, we sort yard waste by a separate bin, we sort some recyclables by a separate bin and human sorters, and we recycle construction waste by a separate stream and human sorters. Presumably, we'll keep adding items to these special waste streams. When will the entire waste stream be covered, Joe Suleiman?
That is actually a method that's been used in the past. It used to be called a dirty MRF, or a dirty material recovery facility, where residents would combine all of their waste into one bin, and using some of the technologies that Brian mentioned, in addition to human labor, they would get separated out into the various recyclable or recoverable streams. Unfortunately, time and again, as people make these multi-million dollar investments in these facilities, they've found that when you're combining all this wet food waste, it then contaminates the cardboard, it then contaminates the paper, it then makes those recoverable materials not recoverable anymore. So it was a great idea at the time, and I'm talking as few as 5 years ago. Many municipalities have invested millions into that kind of technology, and on the back end, it turns out to just be a financial disaster.
Well, on that note, we know now that contamination is such an issue, and everybody is trying to cut down on the level of contamination so that more material can get recycled. But if in this region everybody is throwing all their recyclable material, you know, the plastics and the papers and the metals, into the bin, do those recyclable materials contaminate each other, Joe Suleiman?
They certainly can. One of the concerns that I know that Sonoco has to deal with is glass contamination in their fiber material, like cardboard. So they try to remove as much of the glass from the front end of the process as they can. But you have to remember, Rachel, that all this waste is going into the back of a truck that's basically a compactor on wheels. So all these materials are being crushed and mingled together. And that's why the technology end at these material recovery facilities is so important. One is to unstick that big wad of material and then break it down by fractions into the different recoverable commodities.
Is there any discussion at this point about having separate streams for those materials so that you don't have to unstick it at the plant?
You know, it's funny you asked that. We were just having this conversation, last Friday. Mm-hmm. Recycling used to be where you had two roughly 18-gallon open-top bins that you carried out and set to the curb. One was just for paper and cardboard, and the other one was for containers. Glass, metal, and plastic containers. And that kept those two streams separate. And basically, the resident did the majority of the sorting for us. And the quality of that material was so much higher than we're seeing it today. But to drive higher participation rates, you have to make it convenient. And so somebody came up with the idea of commingled recycling, which is throw it all in one bin, make it as easy as possible, and you wheel that cart out to the curb. And that started this slow cycle where we started seeing it's so easy, I can throw anything in there, and they'll figure it out because they have all this technology, and it's just not the case.
Are we getting to the point, Joe Suleiman, where more people just recycle as a matter of habit, and so you don't need to make it so easy. I mean, curbside recycling is one thing, but three separate bins, and I sound like I'm advocating for a position here, but I'm really just trying to understand whether have we reached a critical point with this? Could there be a change?
I think the short answer to that question is yes, but I don't think we're ready for it yet. And the reason why is the entire industry has gone all in with trucks that are designed for single stream collection, and processing facilities are designed for single stream collection, and all the money from grants that people have purchased these carts with. So it's gonna take as long, I think, to make that switch back as it did to get us to where we're at today. And a perfect example is if you look at Japan or any country in Europe, they've got 4, 5, 6 bins out at their curb on pickup day, and they'll separate out their organics from their food, from their paper products, and what's left is very, very little garbage, but they get that education from a very early age, and it's throughout their entire society.
You're listening to Coastline. Today, it's a deeper dive into the changing recycling market and what that means for private citizens in terms of properly managing their waste streams. With us today, Brian Shea, plant manager for Sunoco's recycling in New Hanover Onslow County plant, and Joe Suleiman, director of environmental management for New Hanover County. You can ask your own question about how to deal with recycling or waste, or share your ideas on how to reduce your personal waste stream on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. Dana from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hey, not to take away from the importance of the plastic conversation, but I just wanted to talk for a second about this, or ask for a second about the second biggest issue on our landfill, which is the food waste. And I know Joe Suleiman and some folks just announced the new composting opportunity at the landfill. And I just wondered if there were any plans for allowing restaurants and grocery stores to maybe have some curbside food waste pickup.
Dana, thanks so much for that question. Joe Suleiman, is that in the cards?
The collection is just as important as processing this material, and we recognize that. New Hanover County, as a policy, feels that it's the private sector that should be doing the curbside collection. What we are going to do as New Hanover County to make it more convenient than folks driving out to the landfill with their small bag of food waste is we're going to add a food waste collection option to our HazWagon, which is our household hazardous waste mobile program that sets up in different parts of the county, different days of the week. And we're going to be rolling that out very soon. I will say that in conversations with folks in the waste collection business, that there is some movement coming very soon. There's a new startup, Wilmington Compost Company, that just started up a couple weeks ago. All the local haulers have expressed an interest with accounts like New Hanover Regional Medical Center, Live Oak Bank, and others. So it's coming. I wish it was happening faster, but it is heartening to see that where the opportunity exists, that folks are taking advantage of that.
We also got a call from Lee of New Hanover County. Do they recycle aluminum, paint, and aerosol cans?
Yes. Yes, there are. And we know there are several different types. It's a pretty broad reach of products there.
Yes.
But yes, those are recyclable as long as the aerosol cans are empty. The aluminum cans are definitely recyclable. Different grades of it, but yes, they are.
And paint, what category does that fall into, Joe Suleiman?
That would come into our household hazardous waste program. Even though latex paint is not considered a household hazardous waste, it is the largest material that we accept at our household hazardous waste program. So if you have liquid paint, whether it's latex or oil-based, we will accept that at no charge from New Hanover County residents at our household hazardous waste facility or the HazWagon.
And just as a distinguishment, that's not in the curbside bin.
Thank you for that. And that's important. I think people can get confused by that. I'll put stuff in the trash and then everything else goes in the bin. And yes. Fatima writes, would it be possible to have the supermarkets in North Carolina have recycling stations that would give the customers store coupons to be used in their next purchases? This is available, she says, in many stores in Connecticut. Joe Suleiman, is this something that you've heard of?
I have seen them before. It's kind of like one of the old style, if I'm kind of dating myself here, but the old billy goats where folks used to take their aluminum cans to a machine and drop them in and spit out a couple quarters for your efforts. That same technology can basically be applied and is applied to a vending type machine where you place your clean recyclables into the machine and it'll weigh it, and you can set up an account and keep track of your efforts. And they do reward you, whether it's with store coupons, as Fatima mentioned, or in some cases cash.
Joe, you've said that between 60% and 70% of the trash that goes to New Hanover County's landfill could actually be composted. Is that the right number?
Yes, it is. We do waste audits every 3 or 4 years where we literally sort through a random load of waste and separate it out by type, weigh it, and get back into percentages. And so that 70% figure is any kind of organic material that is compostable. That's everything from yard waste to paper, cardboard, including waxed cardboard. Food waste is another big fraction in there. So there's a lot of organic material that can go into a composting system that we're still seeing in our waste stream.
Now, let's play ideal world for a second and just say that all of the potentially compostable material is going into the composter and you've had to add a few huckleberries. What does that mean for the trajectory of the landfill?
It would probably double its life to 180 plus years. It would save our department from having to do cell closure and new cell construction. It would push it out decades. So the capital and savings would be tremendous there.
We had a call. Bob of Wilmington asks, what are the ramifications of the water uses in cleaning these recyclables? Is the trade-off of clean water usage for these recyclables worth it? What are the best ways for people to clean their recyclables? And this goes right to the contamination issue. Brian Shea of Sunoco.
Yeah, I don't know if I could give specific figures on water usage. I'm sure everyone uses it a little different, or there's, you know, any ways out there. But ultimately, we do want the recyclables clean. And that's, you know, we don't ask that people run them through a dishwasher. We don't ask that people run their soda bottles and scrub them out completely. But a simple rinse and to get as much residue out as possible is great. You know, earlier you had mentioned the 0.5% level of contamination. Use an example. If you're putting a soda bottle in the bin and half of it's filled with soda, well, that's definitely more than 0.5% contamination. So that's a great way to gauge it, you know, I think, as far as how much by weight is in there. So simple rinses, to answer the question, is probably the best way to go.
Okay, so then let's talk about a peanut butter jar, which is glass, and peanut butter is something that isn't easy to rinse out, like soda from a bottle. What do people need to do with that? Is it important to scrape out all that peanut butter?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. It's simply put, I mean, to, you know, if we ask those if they're willing to do that, that is required. Otherwise, there's a very good chance it could end up in the landfill with all
that. And that's where Bob's question comes in about the cost-benefit analysis that I guess somebody would have to study. Bill of Wilmington says, I appreciate the enthusiasm around recycling, but can the services costs be kept down for consumers? Joe Suleiman.
Well, I can speak for New Hanover County. Every single waste recovery and recycling program that we offer to our residents is free of charge. All of those fees, and it's important for me to point out that our department is an enterprise fund, which means we have to generate our own revenue. We don't get a single penny from sales tax or property tax. So when you come to the landfill to throw something away, there's a fee for that. And that fee is used to offset the cost of all of our waste reduction and recycling efforts. So if you bring any material to our household hazardous waste facility, our recycling drop-off sites, our food waste composting program, our construction and demolition debris recycling program, you can see tremendous savings by taking advantage of those programs because we don't charge for those services.
And if I could just add on that from a curbside perspective as well, to in order to keep the cost down for haulers and processors, as we are the processor, the more contamination that's going in that bin, the more costly it is to process. And so if people are not willing to clean up the stream as a general whole, I mean, the costs are inevitably going to go up because someone's going to have to pay for it somewhere. So the more residue you have in the bin, the more expensive that it becomes as a whole. So we ask that people can keep that down.
A recycling company in Utah, according to Fox 13 in Salt Lake City, printed 27,000 flyers and handed them out to residents. They've teamed up with the city to hold people accountable with oops tags. And basically, they're going to can and looking into the recycling, putting those oops tags on them. And they say, after your third strike, the city can take your can away. Joe Suleiman.
That's actually a not severe policy, as I've seen in some other areas. When you get farther out west, there's actually programs where they won't take your bin away, but they're gonna charge you a fee, and that fee escalates.
You're listening to Coastline. It's an exploration of the nuances of the recycling market. Are you confident that you know exactly what and how to recycle your waste? Sunoco plant manager Brian Shea and New Hanover County Environmental Management Director Joe Suleiman are answering your questions on this Wednesday. Either call us at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this short break, we'll have one more segment for you to get your own question in. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today, we're taking a closer look at how the recycling market is changing in the U.S. and in the Cape Fear region and why some material you probably thought was getting recycled could actually be going to the landfill. Joe Suleiman is director of New Hanover County's Environmental Management Department. Brian Shea is plant manager for Sunoco, the recycling company that contracts with New Hanover County. You can ask your own question by calling us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or by sending an email to coastline@whqr.org. It's the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get that question in. Jane from Wilmington called in and says, can you recycle the Minute Maid orange juice plastics? What about milk cartons? I'm still relatively confused. Joe Suleiman.
And that's a good point. It is relatively new in this market that we're recovering those materials. One way to describe it is as you go through the grocery store, and not always necessarily in the refrigerated section, if it has a gable top, so you imagine like a quart of milk that looks like a cardboardy type material that's got the roof-shaped structure on that thing, and you got to split it open, and it makes a little spout that you pour the material out of. That would be an example of an aseptic container. Minute Maid certainly has those for the half gallon, all the way down to the single serving size that you'll see available out there. Some of them have a screw-on plastic cap. Some of them just spread open. But all those are basically a wax coating and then a paper coating and then a very thin aluminum coating and followed by another plastic coating inside. So it's a multi-layered product there, and you can see it when you tear it open, all those different layers.
We had a couple of callers talk about mixing the recycling materials and being concerned about that. Peggy from Wilmington says she lived in Beaufort, South Carolina, I think it's Beaufort in North Carolina, Beaufort in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. They had trucks that separated the waste streams there, she says. And you guys have talked about how that's an industry change that would need to happen. Jacqueline from Wilmington called in and said, at the county recycling centers, they have the items separated out. Are they kept separate when they're picked up, or are they thrown in together? Brian Shea.
Yeah, so at the end of the day, you know, if it's going to come to our facility and you're mixing, whether it be, you know, a soda bottle with a piece of paper and cardboard, which are all acceptable, great materials that we're after, our equipment is designed to separate that material out. So running it separate is not using what the equipment is designed to do. So it's most efficient when there's a good consistent blend. Again, as recycling industry changes as a whole, equipment's designed to certain specifications when it was designed. So that's why you're always going to have emerging technologies. But, you know, as a whole, it's going to get blended back in together. So that paper, cardboard, plastic bottles, as those are brought into our facility, they're mixed together and separated back out.
According to the Charlotte Observer, the city of Lincolnton, that's near Charlotte, stopped its recycling program, and residents have started throwing their glass, plastic bottles, and cardboard into the garbage. And Sunoco is the city's recycling contractor there. They say they couldn't find a home for the reusable waste. We know that's a problem nationwide. We hear different municipalities dealing with it in different ways. And they say the market for recyclables has collapsed. Why is it different here for Sunoco? Same company.
I didn't get, what city was that in?
That was Lincolnton near Charlotte in North Carolina.
Yeah, so again, even in that aspect, they can be very fragmented as a state. And so it's all about, when it comes down at the end of the day, what infrastructure is in your region. And yes, Sunoco is in the Charlotte area, and we have a big presence in the Southeast. But each plant can have different capabilities of what they're willing to process or what is able to be processed. And again, that comes down to logistics, and it can get even very complicated when you're talking about waste haulers and contracts and et cetera. But as a whole in this region, you know, we are very, very much separating that material out.
And in that same piece, Joe Suleiman, Mecklenburg County Solid Waste Director, says he's concerned that some emerging countries like Vietnam or India may be putting recyclables in landfills. How much of a concern is that?
Well, I was just talking with Brian the other day about this recently, is as we shift the material we ship overseas away from China to some of these emerging markets like India and Vietnam and other places, we have to remember that we can't go back to our old ways where mounds of contamination are okay. They are not, you know, an alternative to our landfilling programs. And so they have every right to reject that material because they don't want us to be their dumping grounds. And so what they're probably hearing is they're taking our waste and just taking it straight to the landfill because it's not economically feasible even for them to process the material.
We have an email from Caitlin who asks an excellent question. She says, I'm curious to know what our experts think about the great straw debate of 2018. Should so much be placed on the individual to recycle, the onus placed on the individual, when corporations proportionately create the most waste? Seems like a lot of fuss over something that's not the biggest cause of waste. Joe Suleiman.
This is a closet passion of mine. In the U.S. alone, we use 500 million plastic straws a day. So it's not a small or insignificant amount of waste. And we've all seen the terrible pictures of marine debris and things like that. And I don't need to get on a soapbox about that. But here locally with our delicate coastal environment, I think it's important to me, and I think it should be important to everyone, that, you know, straws are fine, but there are alternative to plastic straws. And yes, they are more expensive, but, you know, they'll never break down. A lot of them end up in our waterways and things like that. So I would encourage people to explore alternatives. There's metal straws, glass straws, paper straws, all available out there. And I'm excited to announce that, you know, in a few months, probably towards the end of August, we'll be launching a program where we'll be offering folks that are going to host a party or have a picnic or go to the beach, a completely compostable kit that'll include paper straws and plates and bowls and everything like that, so they can have a waste-free outing.
And this is something you haven't announced. You just did.
But the cat's out of the bag.
There you go. So say that again, just to be clear. In August, you think the New Hanover County's Environmental Management Department will provide picnic kits that people can use, like forks and napkins and spoons and plates and straws that are all recyclable or compostable?
Compostable. So what the plan is again, we don't intend to supply, say, a restaurant or a large commercial entity. It's a family gathering, whether it's a football party or a beach outing or what have you. We want them to be able to have a waste-free opportunity for that event. And so we'll give them a reusable bag. Just let us know how many folks are going to be expected to be there. We'll provide wooden cutlery and compostable plates, bowls, and paper straws for them.
Carolyn asks a poop question. Yay. When the landfill management was on Coastline recently, they talked about their composter. Is there a way that county residents can compost, not really recycling, dog waste? Any recommendations on doing this at home?
I would encourage folks not to backyard compost their pet waste. And the reason why is there could be pathogens in that pet waste. And then once that becomes compost, you're now transferring those pathogens to your garden, where you're now consuming fruits and vegetables from your garden that may contain some very harmful pathogens.
Alan says, how much of your discussion applies to Brunswick County?
All of it.
All of it.
Absolutely, yeah. So Brunswick County as a whole, that material is being shipped to one of these two facilities.
Sunoco collects the recyclable material from Brunswick County residents.
Not exactly. We process the material.
You
so there's a distinction
from...
of, you know, most people in Brunswick County probably have a waste industries bin down there, some pink trash, et cetera. But those haulers will then consolidate that material and bring it to a facility like ours, which is Sunoco's in this case.
So the recycling protocols are exactly the same, but what is not the same, Joe Suleiman, I don't know that there's a composting operation going on in Brunswick County. If Brunswick County residents wanted to dump some compostable material in New Hanover County, will they be asked for their ID? How will that work?
Yeah, by our landfill operating permit, we're not allowed to accept waste from outside of New Hanover County. So the gray area is we're not disposing of that waste in the landfill. So my to-do list includes meeting with our state regulators to see that if we accept something from outside of New Hanover County for composting purposes, would that be acceptable? So that's a matter that I have not resolved yet.
Should caps be removed from bottles and jars? And I'm asking this question because depending, and Brian Shea from Sunoco, you've talked about how fragmented the industry is and how practices are different in different markets, even possibly in the same state. So what do we do here with the plastic caps on water bottles or the metal caps on some other kinds of bottles? What do we do?
Yep, we encourage people to keep them on, in fact, which is contrary to what was probably...
Yes, the LA Times, for instance, just published a piece saying, make sure you take the caps off. So leave the caps on.
And reason being that as it goes through our equipment, which is a series of screens, hammer decks, et cetera, what happens is generally recycling is sorted by shape. The bottle cap might be the same dimension as a piece of glass, which is going to fall through our screens, right? We're not sorting it by commodity at that point. We're sorting it by shape, which generally takes specific form. So the smaller objects are going to fall into the glass and get end up in the landfill eventually throughout the process. But as it goes, if you keep it on, and I can't speak for plastics processors, but you keep it on as it goes through that process of recycling, they can float it out and separate the different types of plastic in the next stage. I can't speak to everything in that process, but ultimately that's where it's going to go.
David Biderman, Executive Director of the Solid Waste Association of North America Research and Advocacy Group, says Americans want to recycle, but they aren't very good at it. So can we just revisit some of the issues? We've talked about contamination and how important it is to wash things out. But what other ways do Americans who want to recycle, they really want to do it, but how do they get in their own way?
I think at the end of the day, it comes down to lack of education. That's why we're excited to do programs like this and educate the communities and what's acceptable and what's not. And there is messaging, a lot of resources out there online. And even in this area, we've had meetings as recent to standardize the messaging throughout the municipalities that in the areas we serve and amongst the haulers that bring that material to us. So I think at the end of the day, if people want to recycle, they have the opportunity. Just keeping it simple and keeping it basic, which means putting your paper and your cardboard, your plastic bottles, et cetera, in there, keeping your plastic bags out, keeping your clothes out, keeping hoses, reels, et cetera, anything that's very common contamination that we see out. So when in doubt, sounds cliche, but leave it out.
When in doubt, leave it out, because you really could be contaminating that whole bin. Or the plastic bags, what's the problem with those, Joe Suleiman?
Plastic bags, one, create a tremendous litter issue for us. Two, they tend to tangle around the moving parts of the processing equipment, requiring shutdowns at least daily and sometimes as much as four or five times a day to lock out, tag out the system and take people off their normal work to cut all that contamination out. Now, that's not to say that plastic bags aren't recyclable. They are. But folks should take the plastic bags back to where they got them from. An example, if you shop at Food Lion or Harris Teeter, outside of their entranceways, which are available 24/7, 365, there are collection bins for plastic bags, and those go back to distribution centers and then on to processors.
Styrofoam is a form of plastic, right? Is it recyclable, Brian Shea?
Definitely not.
Okay, what do we know what number plastic that is?
I want to say it's six.
Okay, so we're focusing, again, to be clear, on one and two.
That's
plastics
correct.
One and two are recyclable. Jeff of Wilmington, business owner, says, I have a mountain of, I think that's what that means, urethane bumper covers behind my shop. How should I recycle these, or are they not recyclable? Both of you guys are shaking your heads. Joe.
Unfortunately not. I wish there was a market for something like that. I would imagine back when we used to take bulky rigid plastics, that would be okay.
Yes, I think when it comes down at the end of the day of it, where's the outlet for that material? Where is it going to end up and where is it going to go? And with China placing a ban as of recent on the commodities that's grown, they were the world's largest buyer of scrap material. And with that outlet gone, that makes it very complicated where those outlets are now able to.
And so things like old plastic toy sets that people used to think are recyclable, buckets. What happens to those now? What can people do with those, Joe Suleiman?
Unfortunately, once the market collapsed with bulky rigid plastics, we can't move them at all anywhere.
So that's landfill material.
So that's
material.
Getting landfilled, yes.
If you could leave people with just one thought that would make your lives so much easier when it comes to properly managing the waste and recycling stream, what would it be, Brian Shea?
Yeah, I think, and we've covered this multiple times, but I think, again, knowing what to recycle and where to recycle it. And the biggest headache for us, by far, plastic bags. So please keep those out of your curbside bin and take them to, as Joe said, the Food Lion or wherever you got them.
That's this edition of Coastline. Brian Shea, Joe Suleiman, thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager, Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org at the podcast. Find it on the HQR app or tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.